Well, the world is a dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got James Richard Lane. He's a musician, he's a thinker, and we have a really, really deep conversation that travels around all of the areas of the neighborhood you'd expect it to for this show. We talk about Baltimore, my misconceptions of it. We talk about music. We talk about all kinds of things. But before we get into any of that, it's been a while since I've given the disclaimer, so I'm going to give it again now. Now, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. So any advice that you get from this, if it works for you, I'm very glad. But you could probably get the same amount of goodness from talking to a happy dog. The same kind of thing. It's about the same. You're going to get some level of goodness out of it. Some of that is what you take with you, and some of that is genuinely me. How much of that is me? How much of that is you? I guess that's up to you to decide. But just know, you're just getting all of this from a guy who is still figuring things out. And nothing could drive that point home more than the way I'm feeling today. I'm feeling completely lost, rudderless. I feel like I don't know what the hell I'm doing at all. The sitting around is starting to make me itchy. I am exercising like crazy. I can only bake so many loaves of bread, and I've been working on music, which is also kind of frustrating. I've been working on getting some graphical art kind of stuff done for my parents' campground, which is also turning out to be some level of frustrating. I don't know. There's a lot of good in this world. There's a lot of happiness. There's a lot of things that are working for me. And yet, I'm upset because I'm not firing on all pistons the way I want to be. And I forget, oh yeah, I'm bipolar. And I have a touch of OCD in me. We're going to get into the OCD next week. with my guest next week. But for now, I would just like to say that while I'm here to try and facilitate conversations that can help people learn more about themselves and find ways to deal with things that maybe they haven't thought of a way to deal with it themselves, I'm doing the same thing here. And I've heard some pretty amazing things lately in the conversations to come. I can't wait for you to hear some of this stuff. I've got some pretty amazing stuff coming up. But today on the show, we're actually going to end the show with a song. A song that in many ways might be a challenge for some of you. Because it doesn't necessarily fall into the standard paradigm of what you may be familiar with. Some of you I know are gonna love this. And some of you are going to be challenged by it. But you know what's great about that? It's almost like a form of meditation when you kind of sit through something with the idea of dissecting it, diving into it, becoming a part of it, mingling with it for a moment, and recognizing that you're sharing a space in the universe with something that is alien to you, unfamiliar to you. It's kind of wonderful. It's kind of a great exercise to put yourself in situations and around things that shake up your familiarity. The more you know about the world, the more experiences you have, the richer your palate is going to be. Just when you're thinking about things, you're living your life, you're telling your stories, you'll know that you've been places, you've done things, you've seen things, you've heard things. That's what it's all about. And that's why right now has been so frustrating. Because I feel like I'm not seeing enough things. I'm not going enough places. I'm not doing enough things. When the fact of the matter is, I think I just need to redefine what it is I have the ability to do. The ways that I can excite my brain. The ways that I can engage myself in learning some new things and challenging some conventions. It's pretty easy when you're holed up to go to the things that make you feel comfortable. Right? We all like to do it. And I think that there's something wonderful about being able to do that. But don't get yourself stuck. Especially not in a nostalgia loop. Nostalgia can kill. You really want to be challenging yourself. Because that's the only way to get yourself excited is with something new. So I'm going to get out of the way. And we're going to talk to James Richard Lane. And hopefully, we all get a little something new out of it. We all find ourselves in situations where we don't necessarily know what the best course of action is for us. Sometimes you can't see your own behavior. Mindfulness can get difficult. And especially if you've got any sort of depressive tendencies or things like that, you can find yourself putting yourself in some weird situations that you might not if you had some tools to kind of guide you a little differently.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
But let's start somewhere. I have an idea, actually, of where I want to start, and that is I am deeply fascinated by the chaos and dichotomy of Baltimore.
Oh, okay, yeah.
What can you tell me about Baltimore?
Yeah, sure. So we're on now. Is that correct?
We're rolling.
All right, perfect. Yeah. So I can honestly 110% say with all my heart, my soul, everything that I am about to say, I completely mean this totally true. So I think Baltimore is the greatest city in America. I love Baltimore. I think it is so, so awesome. It's so underrated. I think that I just really enjoy being there. A lot of the population and people enjoy being there. The perception that is given about the city of Baltimore, initially when I was growing up, I was really upset about that. I used to be so angry about just kind of this notion that Baltimore is a hellhole of just people of color roaming the streets and destroying everything. I think that it really, really boils down to this almost possibly racist.
Definitely racist
agenda of like basically how the city is seen, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. I was born in Baltimore. I am from a town called Dundalk, which is on the city-county line of Baltimore. And the way that you would know that I'm from that specific town is because I pronounce things kind of funny. Just a couple of words, like the word water and lark. So it's kind of silly. I have like this weird southern accent, even though like Baltimore feels like more of a northern state or northern city, excuse me.
Sure. Anyway, it's like you talk to somebody from a certain part of Ohio and they're going to sound like Kentucky.
Exactly. Yeah, it is so strange. I was actually dating a girl from Ohio when I first moved back to Denver, and I kind of got that vibe, like almost like a Kentucky, Tennessee like language, like a lazy accent. Almost.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fascinating. But also, I'll tell you.
But Baltimore has its pockets, though, right? I mean, I went back in
Absolutely.
My touring days, going when I the only way I experienced the world was through a van. I went through Baltimore a few times, and I knew people. And of course, I mean, growing up a punk rock kid, I was just fascinated by the stories that would come out of that place. But then you visit somewhere and you realize that stories don't tell the entire story.
God.
It's just a microcosm.
Absolutely.
It talks about events, and events can happen in a place. A place can be rough at a time, but it's so much bigger, like Boston, as an example. People give Boston the same kind of, maybe not to the same degree, but they give it that same sort of the whole town is racist. It's just built that way. It's in the DNA of the place. But if you go to Boston, it is so multicultural.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a pretty wild place. But Baltimore is not, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a pretty great place. But at the same time, I think that there's that level of, There's something special about the way a geography shapes an identity. So tell me a little bit more about your, how the coal became the diamond, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be my pleasure. So, okay, there's so much to say about it. It's kind of hard to just narrow it down to just a few sentences here. But if I had to, I would say that so Baltimore has a lot of really nice neighborhoods. There's the Inner Harbor, Fells Point, Federal Hill, Canton, Little Italy. All these neighborhoods are really, really top-notch. In my opinion, they're nicer than Denver.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's saying a lot because Denver has a lot of wealth.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy the history, the culture, the art, and the food of my hometown. And I think that the neighborhoods that are considered bad areas, for example, Reservoir Hill, which is within the district where Freddie Gray's passing was.
Yeah.
I actually lived in that neighborhood in the last 6 months of my tenure in Baltimore, which was from, I lived in Reservoir Hill from, I think, February 2019 to July 2019. And then I moved back in Denver the very end of July 2019, early August.
Okay.
So I was living there 5 or 6 months, and in the neighborhood where Freddie Gray's passing was, and, you know, you would think, whoa, what are you doing over there? That's like crazy dangerous. You're going to die, all this other stuff. You know, it's really not that at all. Like, in fact, all my neighbors were absolutely loved. They're humans.
Yeah.
They're literally people. I mean, you know, it blows my mind. It's so crazy. I am not a political person at all. I don't share political articles. I don't watch political things on YouTube or anything like that. But something that really blows my mind is individuals that identify as liberals or people that feel the burn or whatever and basically are terrified of neighborhoods that are predominantly African-American majority. And to me, that seems really strange because, like, you know, through a liberal perspective, isn't it supposed to, have a more cultured, diverse country that is acceptance to, like, all walks of life? Or maybe my misinterpretation of, like, like political is completely off. But
no, you're not wrong about that. But I think that the thing that happens a lot of the time is that you find yourself with people who are open-minded to things, but and they think that they're pretty liberal people, but they don't examine their biases, and so they're not willing to admit that racism is something that's kind of, it's kind of in all of us in ways that, you know, we're probably not happy about, But you have to kind of accept it before you can start weeding it out of yourself, because it's kind of institutionalized into us in small ways.
Sure. You know, it's interesting because I was dating a girl for almost 5 years that she was a first generation American from her family's from El Salvador. And her and I were obviously an interracial couple. I'm a white male. And we lived in this neighborhood called Station North, which is kind of a leading art district of Baltimore. Famous musicians like Dan Deacon, Animal Collective, Future Islands, Beach House passed through that neighborhood. And it's sweet. It's a really cool, exciting neighborhood. It's in the same neighborhood where Penn Station is, which you can catch a train from Baltimore to D.C. for $7. Really solid deal. And, you know, we had such a diverse, cultured neighborhood, and we would go to these community meetings, and we would go to these workshops, and it was amazing. It was absolutely incredible to, like, learn the background of all these people that, you know, came from nothing and are, like, developing a community within their culture, within their town. And that's what, like, inspired us to be as heavily involved as possible in different organizations and community events. So I was working at a hostel in Baltimore. It was the only hostel in Baltimore. And I was the community engagement person. So I was setting up events and activities. I was managing volunteer schedules. It was an incredible experience. And we were hosting monthly DIY shows in the hostel's basement. So we would have punk bands. We would have hip-hop artists. We would have it, like, everything. And then we were starting to get different companies to sponsor our events. So we had Kind Bars, Red Bull, tea products. We had different things that were contributing to these monthly showcases hosted at the Baltimore Hostel. And we had people from all around the world. Not only did we have travelers visiting Baltimore, staying with us at a very affordable rate at the hostel, and then we also had the local community coming inside and hanging out in the basement as well to enjoy the concert of the show. So basically, travelers were meeting the locals, and locals were meeting the travelers, and they would mingle. And what was really special about that was that the travelers were getting a feel for what Baltimore actually is. It's people that care about their city, that are completely huge creatives, that have, like, a really great artistic mind, doing amazing things. And I think it showed, like, the reviews of the hostel were skyrocketing. People were raving about our city, like, don't go to DC, don't go to New York City, go to Baltimore. And I had people literally come up to me at the hostel from around the world, and they were like, hey, I actually came here because I saw the review that said I should skip DC, I should skip New York City, and I should come to Baltimore instead. And Now I'm here, and I love it. And, I mean, could you imagine, like, you're having someone from, Australia, just wherever, like, coming up to you, never been to the United States before, and they're trusting the word of, like, this review. It's basically, like, gossiping about their time and their experience. And, you know, we would take them, we would go get drinks, we'd go to the harbor, we'd go to Fells Point, we'd go to the historic neighborhoods. The building that I worked in was actually older than the city of Denver, the building itself. And, yeah, you know, it just shows, like, the value of the history that we have there. It's, like, a very enriched history. So I think, like, that the museums, everything is really cheap, waterfront. You know, there's a lot of transitioning going on constantly. It's like Detroit, right? I mean, I think that, or Chicago even. I think the notion now is that Detroit and Chicago are these, like, really bad cities, and as soon as you get out of your car, you just instantly die, and that's it. You're already dead. So, like, that's what it is. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. That's not true. That's completely not true. You know, and I think that people are starting to come to the realization that basically these big time cities, New York City, DC, LA, Seattle. Like, wow, so special. I can go to the first ever Starbucks. Who gives a fuck? I live across the street from Starbucks.
We can all go to a Starbucks. Yeah, it's not we that can big all a deal. Go to a Starbucks.
Have I been to the first ever Starbucks in Pike Peak? Yes, I have. But the moral of the story is that I think, like, there's become this realization that people don't have to, like, just settle for the Statue of Liberty or the White House anymore. They can go to these other popular tourist destinations that don't get as much cred because it's not oversaturated with people from around the world visiting it.
But it also takes a certain level of willingness and openness to experience something outside of what you're currently expecting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like Absolutely. The mindset of a person who wants to, you know, find the local places versus the chains when they go traveling. Some people are looking for the expected, the comfort of knowing exactly what kind of experience you're going to get. And, you know, I can speak to something that you said earlier, because the Detroit area is pretty near and dear to my heart.
Because I love Detroit.
I came from a little town in Michigan called Saginaw, and Saginaw was about an hour and a half out of Detroit, and so Detroit was a place I saw pretty often, and I saw it in a lot of different lights. And much like the city I lived in, it was peppered with some trouble, but it wasn't all bad, and no city is, no area is, and you also can't really honestly qualify an area without understanding everything that's going on to make the area the way that it is. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, I'll give you an example. The house that I was living in, it was one of those...
In Michigan?
Yeah, it was one of those areas where it was kind of like... I knew which route I could take on my run, and I knew which areas I couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
There was crime, there was gangs, there was 22% unemployment. I mean, it was, which, you know, when you put that, when you put that into it and you recognize that all the jobs are paying minimum wage, the highest you're going to earn is, you know, $30,000 a year, and that's if you're doing awesome.
It
kind of
puts
things in perspective for you.
What years was this?
This was up until 2012 when I moved to Denver.
Yeah, that's believable. Yeah, I believe that.
So it was kind of a rough situation. I actually, you know, I had people break into my house. I had fights across the street. I'd call the cops and, you know, the cops really do anything.
Busted window.
Oh, yeah. Everything. Stuff stolen. Yeah. You know, it was just kind of part of life, and it was, this is just how this is, but at the same time, I knew my neighborhood. I kind of knew where I could be, and I sort of understood what was going on, because it wasn't necessarily out of a recklessness or a need to be malicious. It was like, people are fucking starving out here, so I get it.
seriously. You know, I just finished this book called The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It's a really solid book.
Yeah, it's on my list, actually.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's great. You're going to love it. There's lots of really good quotes in there and just a lot of good metaphors in there as well. So one of the biggest takeaways, if not the biggest takeaway I've gotten from that book, is every obstacle is an opportunity for something better.
Yeah.
That it couldn't be any more true. I mean, basically, like, every time something bad happens, your window gets busted out. Cool. Your car's a few years old. It's going to need a new window eventually. You know, like, I don't even know, something just whatever, like, the case is, whatever type of negative situation that comes into your life, okay, it happened. It is what it is. Now, how can I make this better than what it was before?
Yeah.
And I think that with these cities, Baltimore, Detroit, Chicago is such a major city. It's hard to align Chicago in that, because
Chicago's, you know, too big. I mean, Chicago's a whole other animal.
Exactly. So Baltimore, Detroit, There's other cities out there, maybe Portland. I don't know. There's other cities out there that get lousy reps, and you know, those cities have people in it where they're like, okay, I'm poor, I'm hungry, like shit's fucked, but how can I make this good? How can I make this work to my favor? What can this be? I had friends that there's a lot of them that absolutely love Baltimore, like Baltimore tattoos and stickers and bumper, everything. Like they are fanatics for Baltimore, just like I am. And then I have a few friends that don't really love it too much. And they ask me, why do I keep on moving back? Which I plan on moving back again, actually. I'm not going to be in Denver forever. I'm going to buy a house in Baltimore and live there forever, hopefully, and have family. They keep on asking, why do I keep on moving back? And the reason being is because, you know, they're like, it's so bad. Like, you know, the city needs to change before I would ever consider living there. Be the change. I mean, if you're not the change, who's going to be the change? Because it's certainly not going to be the mayor. The mayor's in jail. She just got indicted 3 years. You know?
I'm used to that.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, but if you are the change, if you're the one that's like, okay, so we have these resources. You know, we used to have a hostel. We have this historic area. We had just all these different things. How can we, like, make this to where it's something bigger than what it is? Run for council. You know, create your own local business. 90% of the business in the city of Baltimore is locally owned, and more than half of that is African-American owned.
Yeah.
How awesome. Like, that's so incredible. Like, that's amazing. Like, when, you know, no, I'm not trying to like shit on Denver here, but I live across the street from Safeway and there's a Starbucks right next inside of that. And,
yeah,
you know, 16th Street Mall is packed. So, you know, there's a lot of breweries. I agree. But these breweries, I would say that they're doing pretty well. You know, I don't think they have too much to worry about.
Denver's a weird place. It's definitely, I mean, I love Denver very much. I picked it as my home for a number of years.
Yeah,
and I did love it. But, you know, I mean, it's not without its issues, just like anywhere else. But tell me a little bit about how you start arriving at this kind of mindset, because this isn't the type of mindset that someone just is grown with. Where do you start getting these things from?
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in poverty. I was adopted by my biological aunt, and we were really poor, really, really poor. I was hungry. I was tired. Things weren't good. And I basically rose past that, you know, with the right guidance. I seeked people that I thought had a creative mindset, people that I wanted to be one day. And these are just like people from my town, people from my neighborhood that I look at and I idolize, just friends. And they kind of assisted in the making of who I am today. Basically, they were like, you know, you should try this and this to get out of this crappy situation. And some of it is, it's interesting stuff that are resources that I think are really valuable that anyone could use. And then I tell it to my friends out here in Denver or elsewhere. And they've never heard of it. So, for example, you know, focus groups. Focus groups are a really solid way to make an easy 100, 200 bucks just to talk about some random topic for like an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like I've done so many focus groups. I can't even tell you how many. Just something as simple as talking about coats. I remember I did a focus group on coats one time, like, and we were just talking about like, oh, what do you like about the code? Do you like the color, the texture, how many zippers it has on it, and all this other stuff? And they're like, well, thank you for your time, Mr. Lane. Here's $150. Here's $225. Here's $300 for talking about this for 1 hour. I'm like, why is this real? Like,
right. But you have to also recognize, I mean, you probably have a lot of the same kind of friends that I did too, where it's like,
sure,
you know, if you put a person who's got a certain mindset, especially that, that defensiveness about them, their answer to the questions could be "fuck your coat."
Yeah,
you know,
there's
a level of sort of, let's say, daywalking that goes along with navigating a world that seems like it's out to take the things that are unique about you and try to grind them out of you. But how do you work within that framework while maintaining that sense of individuality? It's almost like you're walking above the area where you can see all of the knobs being pulled, and so it doesn't affect you the same way. But how do you get to that place? What kind of philosophy were you raised with?
Yeah, for sure. So before I answer that question, I want to say right off the bat, Chris, I feel like it's too bad you left for California, because I feel like we could be friends. I really like the way you're communicating here. It just feels very on point to my life as well. And the answer to the question is basically how I navigated to this. Once again, just friends, and just kind of learning what was missing out of my life. Like, you know, I became vegetarian in 2006, but I didn't start eating vegetables until I was like 2012, 2013. I was just eating like pizza and french fries for years. It's nuts.
Right, yeah.
And it's crazy. I didn't gain that much, but I don't even know how. But the point of that, the moral is, I was missing the nutrients of my life, as well as I wasn't really informed about recycling or reusable water bottles and just like things like that, just basic things that people use in modern time. And as I learned these things, like, it really helped boost who I am today. Just kind of, you know, someone that's just active, just very conscious, and just trying my best to do my part on this world for the short amount of time that I'm in this world. And I think that meditation helped as well. I use an app called Stop, Breathe, and Think, and I am on a 19-day streak, so I'm hoping to keep it going here, you know, because once you start over, then the app will tell you, you're like, oh, damn it, how come I forgot? I could have just did it for 1 minute, and I didn't even have 1 minute. Anyway.
But that's a whole other thing. I mean, meditation is a whole other thing that takes a certain type of mindset to be able to engage with it. I'm still working on figuring out how to properly engage with meditation. So how the fuck do you come across this? Because you seem like you're pretty well put together, like you've thought things out. But I mean, nobody arrives at the level that you're at without something that came before it. I mean, where's the cocoon, man?
So your question is, I just want to make sure I'm hearing it right. How I got to this point, or
yeah, because there's got to be a point of transition. Like, what was the barrier of entry?
I swear, you just picked good friends. I swear to God, it was my friends, man. Once again, I was adopted. I had absolutely nothing. I'm telling you, nothing.
Yeah,
and basically, it was hard. It was really rough. I was trying to fit into school, being a skater, this poor skater kid. And I think when I turned, when I was like 16, like 16 and a half, I met my friend Mike, and he absolutely inspired me. He taught me everything that I know about making money, focus groups, clinical trials, meeting celebrities, like going to fancy parties even though you're poor, like just the weirdest, craziest shit. He just had like this really amazing mindset on how to do this, and I actually just got off the phone with him before this podcast here, but I learned so much from him on a regular basis. He just knows somehow, and we're both from the same town. He taught me a lot. My friend James, another very inspiring person in my life, he dropped out of the same high school that I went to. Same high school, dropped out, taught himself graphic design and coding through YouTube videos, did freelance coding, designed Justin Bieber's website, and then got a call from Burton Snowboards to be their senior web developer for Burton. And he moved up to Burlington, Vermont. So just meeting these people that want to be more than what they are, you know, and just having, like, I don't even remember who my idols were when I was in my teenagers. I guess probably like Arctic Monkeys and the Strokes. Like, right. I love those bands. You know, they're still some of my favorites of all time. And I was like, oh man, they're so cool, rich and famous, making really cool music. They get all the women and have these big houses and all this other stuff. And I thought that was really cool. I was like, why can't I do that? Like, what says I can't do that? And, you know, at first it was about me trying to transition out of this lifestyle. And dude, I didn't even come anywhere close, nowhere close to where I am today. Like, yeah. Literally, I would say the person you're talking to today really started developing when I was, I don't know, but like 25, I don't know, 26. I'll just say 26. I'm 30 now. Yeah. I was just kind of like a wild card, like just crazy dude that lived in LA briefly from Baltimore and just traveled all over the place, road trips, you name it. And I really transitioned into the man who I am today when I was 26. And that's when I started cooking for myself, and basically, I mean, I was doing a little bit of cooking, but I was really starting to get into recipes then. I was running more and just taking these active approaches of just trying to build a better lifestyle, meditation, all this other stuff, and just trying to continue to expand my creative mindset. But then I realized it's not just about me. It's not like I'm only on this planet for a short amount of time. I mean, shit, like I could die from the coronavirus. You know, anybody can. It's really dangerous and detrimental to
and we might
right now. We might. I mean, seriously, we really might. So what the like important part behind all of this is like what can you do? How can you make this good? And how can you build a better future for others too? Like that's like the important part, inspiring other people to do bigger and better things, because there's tons of people from my town, from my neighborhood, that are just in the same situation as I was. They're in poverty. They're hungry. They're tired. They don't know. They have no resources. They don't even know what a resume is. I don't know what a resume is. Like,
right.
You know,
yeah.
That's like the mindset they have. And, you know, just trying to basically educate, inspire, and just like really build understanding of what these things are, I think is really special. It was kind of a lot. I'm sorry. I just really went
but there is it. It sounds yeah. like there was this relationship that was cultivated pretty early on with the idea of adventure, risk versus reward,
and
overcoming the fear of failure.
I mean, failure. Like,
who goes around willing to fuck up? You know what I mean?
No,
I think that's the biggest key. Once you're willing to get something wrong and dust yourself off, you're going to find that you're going to be a lot more successful at a lot more things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I used to get really pissed when I would fail. It's like, what the hell, blah blah blah. You know why?
But then you were using it as a motivator. Even if your emotions weren't necessarily in check, your compass was at least aligned in the right direction.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I wouldn't say I'm perfect at all, but I would say that, you know, I try, and that's the best you can do.
Nobody's perfect. Everyone's always evolving.
Yeah.
If you're not evolving, then you're missing something.
Precisely. Here's something that happened recently. So before this lockdown happened, I went to go do laundry, and I was sitting in the laundromat, and a homeless guy came up to me, and at first I had a really ignorant mindset, which I completely regret. And the mindset was like, oh man, I just don't feel like talking right now. You know, I barely got any sleep last night. I was working on a project. So I was just kind of going along with what he was saying. He was talking about the coronavirus before it really started to become what it is now. And I was barely participating in the conversation.
Yeah.
And then he was like, whatever, and just watching TV. And I was eating a snack, And I just thought to myself, wait, this could be amazing. This guy could have such an incredible story and such a huge impact on my life. What am I doing right now? This is like such a really good opportunity that this guy like would be so generous to like try to start a conversation with me. So I look over at him. I was like, hey, do you want some of my snack? And he was like, oh no, I'm good. I just ate. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, tell me your story. I'm interested to hear it. And he told me that he actually just biked from Tampa, Florida to Denver to move out here in hopes to have a better economy. And I was like, wait, are you serious? And I look at his legs. His legs are jacked.
Yeah,
and then he has like this bicycle right out front. It was a pretty nice bike. And I was like, well, what's your situation? He was like, yeah, you know, I'm homeless, but I still wash my clothes and trying to get a job and trying to get my life together. I was like, dude, that's amazing. Like, that's absolutely incredible what you're doing. He was like, well, what's your story? And I was like, well, I actually, you know, I came from poverty myself. And, you know, I just visited my 50th state last year, which was Alaska. That was awesome. And, you know, like, basically, I have a podcast on Spotify and Apple, and I host a radio show at 92.9, and I'm a musician. And he was like, oh, yeah, so, like, you know, you're doing things you love, too. That's what's important. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, doing what you love is important because, like, once again, I mean, we're all going to die at some point, so you might as well enjoy it while we're here. And him and I became close through that conversation, and it was actually the dryer went off and I had to run to the dryer to get my clothes out, and he actually left, but I really wanted to stop him and ask him if he had like a phone number or an email address,
right,
so I could stay in touch with him. And this is a homeless guy, and you know, other people might not recognize this as like a blessing, but in my mind, like, to have a conversation with a person face to face has so much more value in it today than for the past 2 years, I would say, just because how much our society has grown to holding our iPhones in front of our face,
yeah,
opposed to having face to face conversations.
Yeah, and we are kind of conditioning ourselves to stop having conversation with strangers. And you know, it's
scary,
a pendulum,
right?
Yeah, it's completely scary. And you know, I was a person that was born with, I can't say born with, but I was a person that had and developed and occasionally still has to brush off some pretty awesome social anxiety.
So that's so weird. You seem like I feel like you would be awesome. I don't know. I like you already. Oh, so,
well, I'm this way now. But there was a time, so I'll give you an example. I've been a musician just about as long as I can remember, but I didn't go to my first concert that I paid money to go to the concert until I was 34.
Wow.
Because
how old are you now?
I am 43.
Okay, so almost 9 yeah, years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so I had to make up for a lot of lost time and see a bunch of concerts. I played a lot of shows. Went a lot of places.
How was that for you?
Playing shows was great. Because
you liked it?
Oh yeah, I had a reason to be there. It was almost like being an employee, you know? It's like they can't tell you to leave because you're working.
That's a really good metaphor. That was
how I treated it. And that was how I related to people. I related to people through being on stage. But then afterwards, you know, when it came time to try to sell t-shirts or, you know, get some gas in the van, I was bad that part of it. I didn't know how to do that part. And it took me a long time to get there. And, you know, eventually I did. And now here I am. And all I want to do is talk to people and find out what's going on with them. But it still is something I can access within myself, where I recognize once in a while when I'm out in public, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing again where I don't know how to have a conversation with a person.
Do you know how to turn it off?
Well, I mean, honestly,
you've
really just got to get comfortable with fear. You've just got to get comfortable with doing the thing that scares you within reason. I think the thing that really broke it out of me I mean, to the point where I'll go up and I'll talk to anybody, was I had an incredible, incredible 20-minute bomb doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, I love that.
It was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. I never I felt like my skin was on fire. I've never felt that before. It was a terrifying experience. My heart was beating. I was sweating. My mouth was simultaneously too wet and too dry at the same time. Yeah. I went through my 20-minute set in about 5 minutes, and it was just a train wreck of a situation that I could not pull myself out of, and I didn't. I didn't pull myself out of it. They gave me 20 minutes. I took the whole 20 minutes, but man, was it painful. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. No, that was actually in Denver.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I love that you just shared that story. I mean, that's incredible. You know, like, it really is. It sounds like such a breakthrough for your personal being, you know, like just it sounds like it really developed this transition in your life.
It changed me on a molecular level. I mean it completely.
Yeah, because like now you don't have any reason to be fearful, or like you're like, wow, I just went through so many emotions on this stage. Like you could have literally just narrated that on stage. You're like, guys, my mouth,
yeah,
I can't tell if it's wet or dry right now. Just like, and I feel like the crowd would be like, whoa, this is sad. I mean, like, I don't know.
What would have been easier would be to walk out. That would have been what would have been easier to do. To just say, this isn't working, so I'm going to bail. And,
right.
I don't know why I didn't, because I wasn't the kind of person that was, you know, I've always been a person that can handle just about any situation that's put on me. I mean, I grew up poor. Ooh. As well, so there was,
yeah,
so that I that does something to you.
Most definitely.
And I think that it can be valuable, but there are also other ways that you can go with it, because there were a lot of negatives that I learned from the situation that I was in as well. And it just comes through conditioning. You sort of see what everybody else is doing and how they're coping with things, and you start adopting things that you've seen. You start to, you know, you gather the patterns that you see other working for other people, and you try them on yourself. And, you know, cocooning myself to make everything safe, avoiding pain, avoiding failure, avoiding disappointing anyone, things like that. Always being on guard for violence or trouble. You know, it's like those things can actually be a detriment to you rather than just being calm, being open, and being
certainly
ready for whatever is going to happen next, and having your empathy out where you can see it.
I couldn't agree anymore. You know, I will say that my adoptive mother, my aunt, Lisa, she passed away in July. And that's actually why I moved back out here in Denver, was to try to get it out of my head, move on, and just try to rebuild my strengths almost, and just try to clear my mind and be at peace, because everything in Baltimore reminded me of her, just all the places we'd go out to eat and all the fun we'd have, museums, etc. So I really needed to clear my mindset. So I came back out here. I was so sad because Lisa was the only immediate family I have left. No mom, no dad, no brother, no sister, no aunt, no uncle, nothing. Like, Lisa is it. That's the only family I had. And she passed away last July. I was just completely devastated, cried so much. And I said to myself, I was like, well, there's clearly either two ways this situation. Either, you know, I just keep on sobbing and just, I don't know, just live in sorrow and misery forever, or I just kind of try to become a better person and try to rebuild my life without family. So what I did was I tried to think to myself, what are some proactive steps that have helped me feel better over time. Like, what are resources that I've used in the past or that I've seen in the past that have worked? So I was seeing a therapist. I'm seeing a therapist now, but I was seeing a therapist in 2015, and he was the one that taught me about Stop, Breathe, and Think, which was the app that I'm crazy for. So I was using the meditation.
With that one. It's a real good one.
Yeah. So I was meditating. I was, you know, I've never been a huge religious person by any means, but I started praying. I have this daily gratitude list that I update in my cell phone every single day. I update it right before I go to sleep, every night, I should say. And basically I just put, you know, whatever today, 4-1, 4-1, and then whatever the most grateful thing. So probably today the most grateful thing will be me doing this podcast. So I'll just write Coffee Over Suicide podcast, and then 4-2, whatever for that one. And then I do monthly self-reflection where basically, I'll find questions on the internet, and basically it'll just be reflection questions about your being and yourself. And, you know, they're really personal to you, and I'll email them to myself, and then I'll read it down the line to see how I've evolved or what I need to work on later. And then what else? I feel like I'm missing a big one. The gratitude list, monthly self-reflection, prayer, meditation, and probably just cooking. I've been really into cooking recently. Like I said, I've been vegetarian since 06, but I just started eating vegetables like, I don't know, like 6 years after that. So, you know, I really love cooking. I cook every day. You know, I get a lot of joy out of that and running. So I just, you know, I'm not being as mindful as I should, but like last month in March, I ran 91 miles last month. And that's the most miles I've ever ran in a month. And basically just like setting these goals, setting these things that you feel like has helped other people, help friends, help celebrities, help people you see on the internet to build their life, and just kind of like, championing that and making it into your own, like transitioning it into your own life can, I think it can change a person for the better, in my opinion.
Do you think that all of these things that you're, occupying your intention with, do you think that all of these things are enough? Are you constantly feeling like you're feeding something?
That's such a good question. You are really good. You are really, really good. I've done a few podcasts recently, and I, like, no offense to the other ones, but you are by far the best. Like, well, I really enjoy
your
work here. Okay, I certainly will. Okay, so the answer to that question is, am I feeding, you know, like, am I feeding this ego of hoping that basically I'll be able to relieve this, this sorrow of not having any family? Sure. Most definitely. I mean, I hope that basically this assists to that. I hope this builds like a happier version of myself. Has it worked? Absolutely. It totally has. Is it perfect? No. I get sad. I get depressed. I get really down in the dumps. And what's, you know, you look at things, and you're like, okay, so when a person gets sad, when a person gets depressed, what do? I mean, there's tons of vices out there that people do to, cope with these mechanisms. Drugs and alcohol are very popular ones, which my biological parents were, very involved with, or, you know, maybe binging Netflix, whatever the thing is. And I noticed my personal vices are sweets. I run a lot. Like I said, I run like a crazy person, but I consume so many sugary products. It's nuts. I love Oreo cookies and tea and all that other stuff. It's crazy. I should, it's hard for me to stray away from those vices because like they replenish this joyfulness in me. Oh, but it's not even really that. It's more so it's a substance that's kind of disguising itself, or, you know, as a masquerade of what I really need, which is possibly a nice big hug.
Right. Maybe the love of my parents will be in this double stuff.
Nope. Oh my God.
Keep digging. Yeah. Keep digging.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, all seriousness though, I will say that I think with the gratitude list, self-reflection, meditation, like all of those things have definitely made me feel like a better person and make me feel like I'm on a better trajectory than what I was previously. And it does help me cope with the loss of family. So I think that I would recommend it to anyone. I mean, I truly mean this when I say this, like, you know, if you're feeling down in the dumps, you should try mindfulness over vices for sure. And I know it's easier said than done, but discipline is more than just about the current situation that you're in. Discipline can also...
Well, that was awkward. Let's find out what discipline can do.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened there.
I think that was the universe giving you a signal.
You need
to slow down for a minute.
I have gone on too much of a rant here.
This is great. It's funny with all of these things. There's so many different opportunities that you have where you can decide how you're going to shelter yourself or how you're going to grow yourself. And with all of these coping mechanisms that you've got in place, and all of these ways that you've got to take care of yourself, it's really a lot better than finding ways to distract yourself from what the issue is.
That is true. Yeah,
because it requires. True. I mean, listen to the things that you're talking about. There's a level of mindfulness that goes along. There's a level of being deliberate with your actions. You can't passively cook or run or meditate. I know that sounds a little counterintuitive to some people. But you really kind of can't. You can zen out, but that's not the same thing as being passive. You're actively putting yourself into a state of well-being, a state of bliss, a state of control over yourself. But with all of these things that you're doing, we still haven't talked about where do you have time for music in all of this.
So basically,
I mean, your band is small, right? It's you and a drummer.
Yeah, we're not huge. Yeah. I have a couple of things to say to that. One is, so I'm in two music projects. So I am in the Shaky Experience.
Of course you're in two music projects on top of all of this.
Damn, Chris, if only you lived here in Denver. And by the way, I just want to elaborate here. I don't hate Denver in any way. Like, I wouldn't be here if I hated Denver. I actually like Denver. I don't love it, but I like it. It's like getting close to love. It grew on me. This is my second time living here. Yeah. My first time living here, I was like, meh. But now my second time being here, I am seeing the city for in a much bigger picture, you know. I actually do enjoy all the parks here, and I enjoy a lot of things about the city this time. Okay, on to the music. And all the opportunity. There's an incredible amount of opportunity, and I think that's one of the biggest things that makes this city so special is the opportunities that are here. Anyway, so the music project. Okay, so I'm in a band. We are called The Shaky Experience, and basically we started in 2010. We have three albums out, which you can find on our Bandcamp, which is The Shaky Experience, and then Bandcamp. And we have one EP out, and we just released today, April 1st, 2020, we just released our newest single, which it's almost been 4 years since our last release, and that track is called Earthquake Hands, which is kind of based upon my hands. I have a hereditary tremor. My mom had it, my grandfather had it, and so on. And basically, you know, my hands are always shaking. So I either look like I'm highly strung out on drugs, or I have the disease of Parkinson's. And yeah, so people ask me that all the time. And it's neither. It's just a hereditary tremor. So I've kind of like aligned it into my music a little bit by the Shaky Experience band name. And then our latest single, Earthquake Hands. We're kind of like a thrash punk band. And we've played together every year since 2010, at least one show. And the last few years, I haven't lived in Baltimore. Tom doesn't live in Baltimore anymore, which is my drummer. And he lives in Hawaii. He actually lives out of his van. He's changed so much. He used to be this crazy punk rock dude, and now he's kind of this hippie guy. It's crazy.
You know, the hippies never... and the punks have a lot more in common than they would like to admit. I think the barrier of entry for punks and hippies into each other's world, I think, is the clothing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because you're never going to get a punker in sandals, because they're like, I can't run in those.
Yeah.
What if the cops show up?
Exactly. It's so true. Man. Okay. So you were so personal or personable. I love this. Yeah, we've been in a band since 2010, played a show every year since then. And the last few years, he's lived in Hawaii, I've lived in Denver. How have we played shows? We do it through Skype. So basically, I will set up my guitar, my amp, I'll get the show booked. So it looks like I'm a solo performer just about to play electric by myself. And we're like, okay, yeah, this is cool. And then out of nowhere, I pull up my old Dell laptop, and then I'll plug it into the speaker, and then sometimes I'll have a projector, and I'll just project him on the wall, and he's drumming for me through Skype on the wall of the space or the venue, whatever we're playing, and I'm playing guitar. And it looks so crazy, and it's kind of cool because, you know, we don't get to see each other too often, so we play together through Skype, and then we get to see each other while we're playing, so that's kind of nice. And yeah, we just released our new single, Earthquake Hands. It's on SoundCloud, it's on Bandcamp under the Shaky Experience. So pretty exciting, guitar and vocals, and then him on drums, and yeah, it's all fun. And I also am in the solo project Pelvis Presley. And basically, Pelvis Presley, that's kind of more of like an indie rock, definitely still punk and garage aesthetic to it as well. And Pelvis Presley, that's been around since 2013. I was opening the shows at the Hostel, which I was mentioning earlier under that moniker, and I played the Underground Music Showcase 2018 and was on the same lineup as Deer Hunter, Frankie Cosmos, White Denim, just all these really cool rock and indie rock and punk bands that I admire and respect. Yeah. And, you know, the Underground Music Showcase is a really big music festival here in the city of Denver, over 200 bands, 20 plus venues. And by venues, I mean breweries, restaurants, bars, whatever, participate as quote unquote venues. And it's kind of almost like the South by Southwest of Denver. So to be on that lineup was really special to me. And I released my album Bon Voyage there, which you can also hear on SoundCloud and Bandcamp as well, as Presley Pelvis or Pelvis Presley, whatever. And yeah, it was a fun experience, man. It was so special. It was so cool.
The UMS is really huge. And what's funny about that is that we played the same year. We could have ran into each other on the street.
I love that. Okay, what's the name of your band?
The band that I am in currently, Long Distance, we're kind of
so you're a Skype rocker too.
it's basically just recording at this point and finishing up the next album. But I'm in the band Decatur. And that's Decatur. Kind of, that was a different situation for me because I had always been in like punk bands and aggressive kind of stuff. And this was a very different experience for me. I got talked to by a music producer who was having trouble with a bass player. And he kind of thought that my aesthetic would work well with the bass player.
Okay.
And me and the bass player hit it off great. And then we were used to audition some people for this kind of indie rock pop kind of thing. Like, you know, the goal was to make something commercial that would put a bunch of money in everybody's pocket.
Yeah, sure.
And I've never been involved in anything Classic. Like that before. So I thought this could be really fun. Let's ride this experience and see what it is.
And it's a learning experience. You're it learning was. Something new. Yeah,
I'd never worked with a producer before. I'd never been hired into a band. I always kind of got into music through friends. The last band I was in, we were more like family, which means we hated each other, but we stayed close. And so yeah. it was an interesting experience, and it's definitely not an experience I would have gotten into on my own. I wouldn't have jumped into a band that, you know, I have a sample pad in the drum kit because that's what modern drummers do. And I have, you know, I went out and bought a conga. I never would have bought a conga. You know, yeah, it was just one of those things. It kind of changed everything about how I play. I had to think about where I fit in the song. Taught me a lot. I learned a lot about being in the studio, learned a lot about music That's production, awesome. And I made some great friends. I fucking love those guys. They're the greatest group of dudes that I ever could have asked for.
Has your style transitioned at all? Like, are you slightly different sounding to what you were back then?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a lot cleaner now. I was a lot more interested in getting the ideas out before, and now I'm interested in getting the ideas out, but getting them out just a little cleaner.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Wow. That's pretty interesting. I like that story. I mean, I think that learning something new like that is incredible, going from like this punk distortion noisy setting to like
being the loudest drummer in the room. Like I was always the loudest drummer. I was so loud, I was so fast, I was so proud of how loud and fast I could play. And
we now need to jam together.
I'm just yeah, you know, maybe we'll hook up the Skype one of these days and we'll
right. So what? Okay, where did you play when you played the Underground Music Showcase?
Let's see, we played the Hornet. One mm-hmm. year we played. Oh God, what was the name of that one place? We played Moe's.
Yeah, Moe's. Yeah,
Moe's is dope. And then, let's see, and then the other year we played someplace else. I don't remember
and
the name
And this is all through the band Decatur?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to have to look you guys up. That's pretty cool. What would be, so you know a pretty good amount about me. I mean, I sent you the message. And
yeah.
I gave you a little bit of information on me, but what is your claim to fame? Like, if you had to say... your biggest accomplishment, what would that be?
Well,
or maybe not even accomplishment. It could just be like, you know, one time I was on
I got
this
some
news channel for
I
some
got
reason.
Some weird, oh, I've got some weird ones. I've got some weird okay. ones. Like, as a matter of fact, I have a YouTube video that won't die. I made it for a joke, and I put it to, if I would have known it was going to live on, I probably would have took more time with it. But, you know, in 2 hours, I slapped together Christopher Walken reading Where the Wild Things Are.
Whoa.
And then it was on the news. And, you know, now it's got a couple of million hits. And
wow.
It's kind of going incredible. All over the place. It's just a weird little thing I made. And then...
That's really funny. That's awesome. I want to see this now.
Well, I bet you if you go into Google and you type in Walken and Where the Wild Things Are, it's my video you're going to see.
Perfect.
And okay. And the funny thing about that to me was that it's basically a picture book. There's hardly any words. And so I thought it would be hilarious if he was narrating the pictures because it's an audio book. So,
yeah.
Like, this is what the pictures look like. But he's crazy, so, you know, he says
Did anyone
things.
Reach out to you? like Tosh or anything?
No, nobody reached out. It was, it was on the news as if it was real. Because
awesome.
I didn't want to tell people I was doing an impression. In fact, I didn't want to monetize it because I thought if people saw ads, they would not watch it. And that was a big mistake because that I could have made like 10 grand. lesson learned. The biggest crowd I ever played in front of was 11,000 people. That was neat.
Wow. That's awesome.
Played the House of Blues in Chicago. That was real cool.
Yeah.
I've done all kinds of, I made a movie in Hollywood that nobody will ever see. I was a terrible actor, but I did it and I made some good friends out of it.
Fair enough.
I made a zombie movie last summer. And now one of the guys that was in that, he's just been in a couple of Oscar nominated things. Paul Hauser.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird thing. I've had a handful of experiences against my own proclivities to try to stay out of the way. But you know, it's been a good experience trying to put myself together and figure out how I'm going to exist in this world and how I'm going to be a human being who's a part of things rather than apart from things.
Yeah. And you know, that's one of the interesting things about podcasting is that basically you can share all this content, you can share these stories, and hopefully it inspires others. You know, the reason why I reached out to you is because I love podcasting. I think it's so special hearing other people's stories and meeting people and talking to them and just having this conversation right now feels, you know, just really unique to anything else that I'd be doing. Or, you know, so I think that it's cool that you have this platform to basically talk about just like these random topics, including what your claim to fame is. I think that's always like a good like topic to bring up when there's nothing else to say. Maybe you're out to dinner date or having drinks with buddies and you just don't know what else to say. What's your claim to say? Well, blah, blah, blah. You're like, well, shit, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know? and it's also kind of cool because with my podcast, so I host a podcast which is named after my band. So once again, my band's name is The Shaky Experience, and then there's The Shaky Experience Podcast.
That's a great name, by the way. I fucking love that name.
Thank you very much. My friend Alex Pachepko and I created it. It was a dual decision by us. So The Shaky Experience Podcast, that's available on Spotify and Apple Music through the Anchor app. And essentially, I started the show interviewing local musicians and community members in Denver because I was doing all those shows in the hostel's basement in Baltimore. And I was like, how can I connect with people of Denver? Like, you know, I don't have the same resources here. Like, I could work for a hostel and do the same thing, but I kind of want to do something different. I want to build on something else now. So I got involved into radio at Met Radio, and I did that at MSU Denver for years. And that's when I was interviewing these local musicians that were making names for themselves through local press, like 303 Magazine, Westward, Ultra 5280, et cetera. And it was fun having them on because it really helps build an identity for myself here in Denver and basically show that, hey, I'm an artist too. And basically, I would love to collaborate or I'd love to hear your story on my show. So that's what I was doing for about 50 episodes. And within those 50 episodes, I started to develop some confidence within my show. And I thought to myself, well, you know, it doesn't have to be just local. I could do touring musicians as well, or maybe, you know, business owners and even councilmen. I interviewed District 7's councilman here in Denver, Jolyn Clark. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, then I really need to try. So I started sending out emails to booking agents. And recently, this year alone, I interviewed 2020 Grammy nominee Yacht. And then I interviewed 2004 Grammy nominee Telepop Music, as well as other musicians that have been featured on Adult Swim and
you know, Ghostly International record label, as well as different, you know, bigger name media sources. So interviewing these people and hearing their stories, going from the past, where they started off at, did they start in poverty, did they start off with a silver spoon in their mouth, the present, what's going on now, and what they want their future to look like. Do they want to do music forever? Do they want to go to an IT job? What do they want? Do they want kids and a stable life on a farm? Like, you know, and it's cool hearing these stories because it really allows for my listeners, at least, to hear some of their favorite artists or just artists that they've maybe read a review on Pitchfork or something, and see what it is about the musician, of how they got there and where they want to be and where they are now. So I don't know. I think it's fun.
It's probably the most worthwhile thing I've ever done with my life, is create this podcast.
Yes. And this is your third season. You just started season 3.
That's right.
Yeah, I was listening to some of your episodes, and I thought it was cool. You had your previous bandmate on, I think.
Yeah.
Which was your last episode, and that was fun. That was a good interview.
Yeah, season 3 premiere is in just a couple of days, you know, if we can let people behind the wall and let them know when we're recording this.
Yeah. How did you get started in podcasting? I'm curious to hear your story.
Oh, that's a story for another time.
Another time.
So,
enough. Yeah.
For today, why don't we just do this?
Sure.
Thanks for talking to me today.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. Yeah, it was awesome. You sound like a really good guy, and I'm sad that you don't live in Denver.
Ah, technology. Everybody's living in their house these days.
True. So we could develop like a really solid relationship through this technology you speak of.
And there you have it. You know, what's funny is we talked for another hour after the microphones went off, and it was a great conversation. I'm so glad that I got to meet this dude. And you know what? You're going to be happy that you got to meet this dude. If you want to get some more James in your life, and I know that you do, you can find him on Instagram at JamesLane1989. You can find him on Facebook at The Shaky Experience and theshakyexperience.bandcamp.com. Get yourself some music. And speaking of which, right after this episode is done, right after you're done hearing my music, it's going to fade for a couple of seconds and you're going to get his music. Isn't that wonderful? Something brand new for your ears. And until next week, don't kill yourselves out there. Take it away, James.
Daydream.